So last week we had talked about the Vedas, and there are three portions of the Vedas. The first portion is the do's and don'ts, or the instructions. We will not be covering the text today, because since this is the first Upanishad, I thought we should spend a little time in introducing the subject, so we won't be doing the book today. Because the subject is quite subtle, so I thought a little more introduction would help us. So there are three portions of the Vedas. First is called the mantras and the brahmanas, which are the rituals and the do's and don'ts, the instructions. Mantras and the brahmanas. And all scriptures have them, you know, the Ten Commandments, the teachings of Dharmapada, the Guru Granth Sahib. All the scriptures give us do's and don'ts. And why do we need them? Because there are three impurities of the mind. The first one is called mala, or dirt. Our mind is full of a lot of dirt: anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, selfishness. And when I perform my duties as instructed by the scriptures, do the right thing, work unselfishly for the benefit of others, without ego, without I and mine, seeing the whole world as a manifestation of the Lord, then the dirt in my mind gets reduced. I become less jealous, less hateful, less angry, less selfish. So the first mala is removed by the first two portions of the Vedas, called the mantras and the brahmanas, which we had talked about last time. So that's why it's very important to follow the instructions given by our great masters. The second is called upasana, or worship. That's also a part of the Vedas. Worship removes the agitation, because our mind is not only dirty with anger and greed, but then when the anger arises, or greed or jealousy, my mind gets agitated, my mind gets disturbed. So one way, of course, is to practice the do's and don'ts, but also when you sit close to the Lord, and it doesn't matter which form, doesn't matter which building, whether church or temple or mosque or Gurudwara, doesn't matter whether you're reading the Granth Sahib or the Gita or the Bible or the Quran, but when you approach the Lord and sit in His presence or her presence, the mind becomes calm, the mind becomes quiet. That's why when you go to a place of worship and you sit there, there is so much silence, there is so much peace, that when you walk out of there, your mind becomes peaceful. So the agitation is removed by upasana, by worship. Upasana, the word, can be split into upa and asana. Upa means near, asana means sit. So what is upasana? Sit near the Lord. That's why when you go, you know, to a place of worship and you sit in front of, you know, the idol or the holy book or the picture or the cross, you feel very good. But our problem nowadays is that instead of sitting in front of the Lord, in front of being upasana to the Lord, we do computer upasana. We spend hours and hours sitting in front of the computer. Or nowadays the cell phone, you know, just searching the web, you know, checking your email. So, or TV upasana, you know, that is another favorite that we all. So we have to decide, what am I, because whatever you sit close to, you acquire those qualities. If you are constantly sitting in front of the TV, whatever they are throwing at you, you will acquire. If you're the closer you are to the Lord, because the Lord represents love, compassion, kindness, sweetness, gentleness. So the closer you are to the Lord, the closer you get His qualities. The third impurity of the mind is ignorance, called ajnanam. So the first two are removed by the first three portions of the Vedas. The last portion, which is the Upanishad, which is the knowledge, removes ignorance. And ignorance is ignorance of myself. Ignorance of who is God, who am I, what is my true nature. I just think of myself as this man or woman, you know, Asian or white, or but what is my true nature? Why am I here on this world? Why was the world created? Who is this God that created the universe? What does he do? What is his nature? Where is he? All those things are answered by the Upanishads, and that's what will be covered in this text. Now, the word Upanishad is very interesting and has several meanings. Upa in Sanskrit means near, ni means below, and shad means sit. So, Upanishad, near, below, sit. What do they mean by near, below, sit? So, they say near, go near a teacher, approach a teacher. The Upanishads cannot be learnt just from a book or just from, you know, internet or, you know, searching the net. No, it has to be a physical approach to a teacher. Just as golf, you cannot learn by reading a book or watching a video. Tennis, you cannot learn. You cannot, you know, even people go to universities. Why? Because the teacher has to, first of all, give the instructions, and then if you have any questions, you have any doubts, you can ask the teacher, whether it's your golf pro or tennis teacher or a math teacher or physics teacher. So a teacher is necessary. So the first thing is you approach a teacher. And then they said, ni means below. Sit below. What does it mean by sit below? What it means is that when we approach a teacher, we should go with an attitude of humility, that I am, because water only can flow from a higher level to a lower level. Knowledge can only flow from a higher level to a lower level. So when we approach a guru, we should approach with an attitude of reverence and attitude of humility, that I am here to learn. A lot of people go just to test the teacher. You know, they will have a question and they will say, I have asked this question to 10 different teachers and none of them could answer. Let me see if this one can. Then you are not going to learn. Or if you say, I already know it, I'm just here to see how good this teacher is, then again you are not going to know that. So we approach the teacher with an attitude of humility, a willingness to learn. And then only your knowledge can be that I am empty and I wish that the knowledge to be filled up. Or I am like a clean slate, like this board before we wrote on it was clean. And then you can write on it. So similarly, when I approach the teacher, you say, I am a clean slate teacher. You please write on me. Give me the knowledge. Once you have found the right teacher, then an attitude of humility is very important. Talking about teacher, the student got a 0 grade on his test. So the student says, teacher, I don't think I deserve a 0 on this test. He says, I agree, but that was the lowest grade I could give you. Another teacher asks a student, she says, how do you get into so much trouble? Every day you are in trouble. How do you manage to do that every day? He says, teacher, I get up very early in the morning. So not that kind of an attitude, but an attitude of humility is required to learn. The word shat also means destroy. See, at the Sanskrit, the same word can have different meanings depending on the context. So shat means to destroy. So Upanishad. So when you approach a teacher with humility, he destroys your ignorance. He destroys your selfishness. He destroys your negativities. So that is why one must approach the teacher with humility. Shad also means to attach, to approach. So this knowledge of the Brahman, the total consciousness, is a very subtle knowledge. It's not as simple as physics or chemistry or mathematics, even though that is difficult to study. Physics, quantum physics is very difficult. But this knowledge is even more subtle because it talks about something I cannot see, I cannot perceive. So that subtle knowledge, to approach it, you need to go near a teacher and sit with humility. So Upanishad means go to a teacher and approach the teacher with humility so he may remove your ignorance and may bring you closer to that knowledge. Now, what is the knowledge in the Upanishads? We say it is the highest knowledge. It's the most subtle knowledge. As I said, physics, chemistry, mathematics can be studied in the books, can be studied in the universities, can be studied in colleges, can be taught by a teacher. But this knowledge of who am I is so subtle, is so difficult. It's not difficult in the sense that it's impossible or I cannot get it, but it requires a lot of thinking, it requires introspection, it requires going within. And when we are on this path, as you go on the spiritual path, you will find a lot of questions will arise in your mind. At least I personally constantly have questions, and they will keep on arising. So that's why having a guru like Swami Ishwarananda who comes here, or other teachers who come here, whenever I am with them, I always try, instead of talking about politics or talking about useless things, talk about spirituality. Ask them. When Guruji was here, Swami Tejomayananda, last week, some of us had the opportunity, a lot of us, to sit with him. And so when you are with the teacher, take advantage of the opportunity to ask, because this knowledge cannot be obtained just by the books. People say, why do I need a teacher? I can get this knowledge from books. I think Swamiji addressed that when he was here. He says, first of all, this question, why do I need a teacher? You can only ask a living human being. Can you ask a book? Why do I need a teacher? No, you cannot. The book cannot answer your question, but a living teacher can answer, why do I need a teacher? Number one. Number two, when you're reading the book, and if you fall asleep, will the book say, this guy has gone to sleep? No, the book will remain open and you fall asleep. But a living teacher will know you have fallen asleep. So either he will tell a joke to wake you up, or he will say, this student is sleeping, let me also close the book and go to sleep. So the book will not know whether you are paying attention or not. The teacher will know. Third reason why we need a teacher, people say, well, I can get this knowledge from books or I can get this knowledge from internet. But whoever wrote the knowledge in the book or the internet was a teacher. It wasn't an ignorant person. Somebody who wrote this book had to be a wise scholar. So you are saying, I'm going to read the words of a scholar but not listen to his words. So that's why the direct knowledge from a teacher is very important. And the main knowledge of the Upanishads is the knowledge of Brahman. Brahman is the what we call as the God, the Lord, the substratum, the support of this entire universe. We say the entire universe is sustained by that one infinite consciousness, which we call Brahman. Brahman is Sanskrit, means big, the biggest. So that which is biggest, that which is bigger than this whole universe, the universe extends trillions of miles, but that Brahman, that consciousness, is even beyond that. Much, much bigger than this whole universe. And this universe is not only what we see in space, but also the heavens, the hells, all the different worlds. So Brahman extends beyond all that. And that is there, is not only extending everywhere, not only is there in all the way in space, in heaven, in hell, but is there in plants, in birds, in fish, in humans. It is that which is my true nature, what we call as Om or consciousness or Brahman. So that is my true nature. And that is the knowledge that I need to get. And there are a lot of benefits of getting this knowledge, which we shall see in the next few classes. But they say that the reason we acquire knowledge is for higher gain. Any knowledge you acquire, not only about the spirituality, but say, I want to study medicine, or I want to study engineering or law or economics or politics. So I get admitted to university on the East Coast, Boston or Vermont or somewhere, and it's bitterly cold. I've grown up in Bakersfield, never saw snow, and then I have to deal with all this snow, and then I'm so cold. But I put up with it for 4 years, 8 years. Why? Because once I finish this, my college, I'll be a graduate. I can, get a good job. I can have a good career. So I put up with discomfort for the sake of acquiring higher knowledge. Similarly, not only here, but a lot of us came from India and we came to the United States to study, and we came to a new country with a new culture and, you know, different people and different thoughts and different ideas. And we went through the university and college here. And in the beginning, it was difficult because, you know, we were not used to the system, the education system. But why did we do that? For a higher gain, that the knowledge in the United States universities will help me to grow. So similarly, the knowledge that we get from the Upanishads is the highest knowledge, the knowledge of who I really am. And that knowledge is required to remove all kind of sorrows, all kind of discomforts. We'll be discussing that in the subsequent classes. So that knowledge I need to obtain, and that is why I approach the teacher for the highest knowledge, which is the highest gain. Now people say, how long should I study the scriptures to know that I have progressed? You know, like you, to get a bachelor's, it takes 4 years. To get a master's, you know, maybe takes 6 years or 7 years. So how long should I study? So they say spiritual knowledge, one unit is 12 years. You have to study for 12 years before you notice a substantial improvement, a substantial change. So does that mean, 12 years, that I'm not interested in wasting 12? It's not that for 12 years you won't progress. You will progress. But once you have spent 12 years in spiritual study, there will be a substantial shift in your understanding, in your awareness. That's why everything in the world is 12 years, like kindergarten to 12th grade. You know, schooling is 12 years. And then if you see the, you know, medicine and a lot of law, a lot of them are 8 plus 4, 12 years. So 12-year units are required for a substantial change in my physical and my mental understanding. Even, you know, to study a sport like golf or tennis, or you can't learn overnight. People come here for one or two classes and then say, you know, I have learned how to meditate. Now I can meditate on my own. I myself have been studying this knowledge off and on for over 20 years. And there is still so much that I feel I do not know, especially when I hear all these wonderful teachers. You get so inspired. So give yourself 12 years. Study for 12 years and then there will be a substantial shift. So do not be discouraged. As you are going through the 12 years, first year, second year, third year, there will be definitely an improvement. As like when you play golf, the first year and then the second year and the third year and the fourth year, you will get better and better. But to become a pro, you need at least 12 years of hard work. So similarly, 12 years is the unit of spiritual knowledge. So when you are here, you say, I'm committed. I want this knowledge. I want to get it. So it's okay. 12 years, that's fine. So what? In this whole life of 60, 70 years, 12 years is nothing. And in fact, if you believe in multiple lifetimes, we have had so many births before and we will have more afterwards. So if I have to spend 12 years to achieve the purpose of my birth, it's worth it. So do that. So give yourself some time. Be patient with yourself. Don't get impatient. I sat for meditation and my mind is still running. Oh, it's a waste. No, I'm not going to. No, not like that. Be patient with your mind and slowly over the months you will improve. And love for this knowledge is very important. I must love this knowledge. I must love God. I must love myself. And I must love this knowledge that can take me to my own true self, to God. Without love, you cannot progress. You know, a person who plays in the NBA, in basketball, you ask him, are you playing basketball for the money? No, he's not playing for the money. Money is incidental. He's playing because he loves the game. He loves the sport. A person who spends hours in the physics lab or the chemistry lab, middle of the night, for weeks on end, you know, trying to find an answer to some problem, he's not doing it because he gets a salary, a professor's or an assistant salary. He does it because he loves the subject. So I must love this knowledge. I must develop an inner longing that I need to know, I need to reach, I need to be that. Then and then alone you will progress. If you are just doing it as a part-time hobby, you know, it's okay, I have nothing to do on Thursday night, let me go sit. Then, yeah, you will still learn. I mean, there's nothing wrong. But when you have this longing that I need to know what is in this text, I need, then you're understand. Then what will happen is that you will not only read only on Thursday night, but every day of the week. Read some good books, you know, listen to some good talks. We have so many talks on the internet by all the acharyas of the Chinmaya mission. There are talks by Tejomayananda, Ishwarananda. All you do is just click on that. And you can get wonderful DVDs on YouTube. So acquire this knowledge. And we must have the correct means of knowledge. Like to see the color of this tablecloth. Can I see it with my ears? Can I listen to the color? Or can I smell the color? Or can I taste the color? No, I have to see it. Only eyes can tell me that the tablecloth is blue. I cannot do it by touching or tasting or hearing or, you know, only. So the right means of knowledge is eyes. And my eyes also should be clear. If I have cataract or if I have some, you know, eye disease where my vision is not clear or if my glasses are absent, then I won't be able to see the color. So for color, it is eyes. For listening, it is ears. If I want to listen to a piece of music, my ears should be clear, and then not only listening, not only ears, but my mind should be behind the ears. Like now some of you, all of you are listening to me, but some of you, your mind may be somewhere else, thinking about children or work. And so even when the sound of my words are coming, but they may not register. Why? Because my mind is not there. So not only your ears have to be there, but your mind has to be behind the ear. So similarly, when I approach this knowledge, what is the means of knowing Brahman, knowing God, knowing me? That is the Upanishad. The Upanishad, the textbook and the teacher is the correct means of knowing who I am. So that's why a lot of importance is given to the Upanishad. So the means of knowledge of knowing Brahman, you cannot hear him, you cannot see God, you cannot hear God, you cannot smell, taste, touch. You can only experience through silence, through meditation. And this textbook will teach us how to meditate and what is the goal of meditation. Then people say, how do I know God exists? If God was everywhere, why don't I see him? You know, and we say, if I see it, I believe it. If I don't see, I don't believe. But seeing is only 20% of our knowledge. We get some seeing, some from hearing, smelling, tasting, touching. So there are five sense organs. Seeing is only 20%. Secondly, just because I see it does not mean it is real. Like we say the sky is blue. But is the sky really blue? No. Actually, there is nothing called sky. Once you go out into space, the reason the sky appears blue because the sunlight is refracted by the atmosphere, and the atmosphere takes away all the light except the blue light. So the blue light comes through and makes us think the sky is blue. But astronauts, when they go into space and they go beyond the atmosphere, they find everything black. It's all black, black, black. So there is nothing called blue sky. It is just, so if I see the sky, it looks blue. That is an illusion. Or we say the sun rises in the east and then moves across and then goes and sets in the west. So we feel the sun is moving. But actually, science tells us the sun is stationary. It is the earth that is moving, giving an appearance of the sun moving. So just because I see something does not mean it is real. Like we go in the desert. And we see mirage, especially when people are thirsty. They see water everywhere in the desert. But does that mean if I see water, that means there is water? No. So just because I don't see God does not mean God does not exist. So just because I don't see it does not mean it is not real. And that is what the book will tell us. Then the way to know is to listen, think, and abide. It's called Shravana, Manana, and Nididhyasana. Those are the three important steps in any learning. So the first is to listen. Listen or to read. That means get the knowledge from the teacher. Whatever knowledge through the scriptures, through reading the books, through listening to discourses, talks by teachers. So you listen, you see, you learn, and then you think about it. It's called mananam. You go ahead and go home and contemplate on it, that what I have heard from the teacher, is it really valid? Does it apply to me? Will it benefit me? So having been convinced of the correctness of this knowledge, do not accept the knowledge blindly just because it is written in the scriptures. You're not saying, does not mean you don't have faith in the scriptures. You have faith, but then whatever knowledge you have acquired, you then think about it and see whether it applies to me, whether it is pertinent, whether it is useful. And having acquired and thought about it and removed all my doubts, then you abide in that knowledge, which is called nididhyasanam. You then make that knowledge yours. Don't only leave the knowledge in the book, but make it mine. Just like the scriptures tell us, you are not this body, you are that infinite consciousness, the Atman, appearing in this body that I have heard, but then I have to abide in that knowledge, make that knowledge mine, that yes, I am that. And I have to be totally convinced of that. So it is a gradual process. You think, you listen, you contemplate, and then you abide and stay in that knowledge and bring that knowledge into your daily work, like, you know, a knowledge of medicine or engineering or law. You have studied about it, then you think about it, and then you start applying it, like a doctor sees patients, or a lawyer is seeing clients, or an engineer is building bridges. So the knowledge which they have acquired in the university, they make it their own knowledge, and then only you can become a good doctor or an engineer or a lawyer or a computer programmer. So that is called Shravana, Manana and Nididhyasana. And again, I have to repeat, the mind for this spiritual knowledge has to be pure. That's why they say purify, purify, purify. Purifying is the number one ingredient. Just as, say you have tasted something very bitter and your tongue is full of bitter taste, and then somebody gives you a sweet, a chocolate, that will still taste bitter. Wow, it's terrible. Why? Because your tongue is still coated with that bitter taste. So you wash out your tongue, wash out your mouth, rinse it, and then you eat something sweet, it will remove the bitter taste. So similarly, our mind, when it is full of bitterness, even when the sweet knowledge is poured into it, it will appear bitter, it will have no effect. So you have to remove the bitterness from your mind, fill your mind with love, compassion, kindness, and with that love, when you then that knowledge is poured by the teacher, then that knowledge will bear fruit. Then only it will be beneficial. That's why they say that not only study, but also constantly working on your mind. Make sure that whatever negativities are there in my mind, I should remove them consciously with my effort and with prayer. With the Lord's grace, when I can remove these impurities, I purify the mind. Only in a pure mind will this knowledge abide. If the mind is full of negativities, the knowledge will not stay. So this in brief is an introduction to Upanishads and to why we need this knowledge and what is the process of acquiring this knowledge. And then next week we'll hopefully get into the text. But I'll still talk a little bit more about what is Kaivalya and who was the teacher and so on. So yeah, we'll go further in along this text. But I thought these last two talks were very introductory talks, which help us to get our mind ready for the study. Because this is the first Upanishad we are doing in this class. So I thought it would be good to spend some time introducing the subject. Does anybody have any questions, comments? Yeah.
I'm sorry, but I think 12 years seems too long.
Again, you know, the example is like golf. To be a good golfer, it takes 12 years. And people are ready to, or to study medicine, how many years it took us? 24 years. From age 5 to age 29, it took us 24 years to study medicine or law or engineering. Because this is such a, I'm not saying that for 12 years there will be no change. As I said, each year you become a better golfer, you become a better tennis player as you 12. But the unit of time measurement is 12 years because it's very subtle. It's very subtle. And it doesn't, what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that for 12 years there will be no change. What I'm saying is one should be patient and be consistent. And you say, I'm in it for the long haul. That is the idea.
It's a guide.
It's a guide. And it's a commitment. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that for 12 years you will remain ignorant. No, not like that. But I am committed to keep on with this knowledge till I reach the truth. And even if it takes me 12 years, 24 years, even whole lifetime, I'm ready for that. That kind of commitment.
How do I know I live to 77?
Next life.
Okay.
This knowledge will continue. It will not end, yes.
Did the 12 years come from somewhere?
Yeah, because the people used to go to Gurukul for 12 years.
Oh.
See, what would happen is a child from the 1 to 12 years, he or she would stay with the parents. And then they would go to the teacher and live with the teacher for 12 years. And where they would acquire all the basic, not only spiritual knowledge, but history, geography, science. Like ours also is 12 years, right? Kindergarten to 12th grade is 12 years. So 12 years is a unit of education. And then the next, after 12th grade, then to become, an undergrad, graduate school, and then residency and training is another 12 years. So it takes 24 years before you can go out in the field and work, whether it's computer or law or engineering or medicine. So 12 years is a unit of education, that's what. Also, it depends on how much prepared you are. Like there was a teacher in India his name is Nisargadatt Maharaj, and he used to make cigarettes, bidis. He used to make these handmade cigarettes at home and then sell them. And so he was not even educated. He had never gone to school. And he was a poor bidi maker, and they used to make by hand and sell them in the marketplace. And he was told by a teacher, you are that. A teacher just approached him and must have seen something in this ignorant bidi maker. He told him, you are that. Now this person said, I am that? He said, yes, you are that. You are that consciousness. You are not this bidi maker. You are not this. So for 2.5 years, he stopped making bidis. He stopped studying, and he just kept on thinking, I am that, I am that. And in 2.5 years, he realized he didn't need 12 years. He could realize and he became a great realized master. And after that, after 2.5 years, he went back to making bidis. But then when people would come and talk to him, if you read his interviews, the knowledge is so high, it is very difficult to understand. And you cannot imagine that these words are coming from a person who never went to school. Is the teachings are of a great master, and the words that came out of him were such elevated knowledge that even an ordinary individual would not even understand. That's how evolved he became in 2.5 years. So we are not saying that everybody who comes here will take 12 years. It depends on your pre-existing knowledge. He must have in his previous life studied this. Otherwise, it cannot happen in 2.5 years. He must have studied it, and the teacher must have recognized that the student has some potential. Otherwise, why would he go and tell this guy, you are that? You know, I mean, he's not a fool. So it all depends on the previous level of achievement. Like even Jesus, didn't he go away for 12 years? Jesus also, you know, he went for 12 years. He was wandering and acquiring this knowledge. Some people say he went to India. I don't know. Some people even believe that he went to Banaras. And that's where he sat with the teacher and he acquired this knowledge. We don't know, but I'm not saying that is the truth. But it took him 12 years also. So 12 years has a lot of significance. Huh? Yeah. Yeah, it's not meant to discourage you. It's meant to remind you that it needs more commitment. Do not expect an overnight change, but it will happen. The more you put an effort, my father always says, the more sugar you put, the sweeter your tea will become. So the more effort you put, the sweeter will be your result. So that's all it is.
It needs only 12 years.
If it's only 12 years, that's good. If I had got it in 12, I would have been happy. I've been at it more than 20 years, and I'm still nowhere there, I don't think. Absolutely. And also, after a while, you know, like, you know, you all of you ask questions. I don't prepare, and I don't know from where the answers come. It is because, you know, once you have put effort in it, and once you are sitting on this mic, somehow the answers come spontaneously. So the more you have spent time in this, the easier it becomes, I find, to right. That's what they say, a master can still his mind for 4 seconds. So that's why we shouldn't get discouraged. The point is that the more you put the effort in this direction, the better you will be. So that is the idea, that that should
is
be
it
a commitment.
To be in the samsara, like endure your daily duties and raise kids and be a husband.
Yeah, it is easier if you can leave everything, and that's what they recommend, but most of us cannot do that. We cannot leave our husband and children and work and everything. You want to. Yeah, we all want to. But so the idea is that make your work as worship. When you are working in the world, make it as a worship. Every patient you see, Mother Goddess is in front of me, you know, that idea, or every customer or every client or everybody you deal with as a teacher, every student in the every class, every child is God himself. So when you make your work a worship and work with the idea of serving the Lord, then even, and a lot of people have remained in the world and succeeded. Janak Maharaj, he was a great king. He was an emperor, had a huge kingdom. And he, while he was a king, he was able to study with the Ashtavakra, with the teacher, and realize the truth. So if he can do that, running a whole kingdom, you know, with so many problems, if he could do it, we can do it too. So we should get encouraged by such great people. Though, yes, leaving like Buddha, you know, he felt that he could not acquire this knowledge as a prince. He had to leave. So most religions do recommend. But if you can do your duties with detachment, without putting I and my, doing as a service of the Lord, detaching yourself, then every activity can become a prayer and you can evolve. A lot of great people have evolved just, you know, they were householders. So many great saints, Tukaram and Narsimh Mehta and, you know, Mirabai, and they all continued to live in the world and still reach the highest. So it is possible. Yes?
I have a history question. The Vedas, they were written...
Actually, over a few thousand years, the Rig Veda was the original. And then the other Vedas, actually the Vedas, we had covered that last week. But what was, the Rig Veda was the first. So these teachings were not written by one individual. As we said, it is Shruti, it was heard. So these masters in their meditation, they heard, you know, the voices. And that was transferred by them to the student, and then student to the next student, and so on. And then Ved Vyas, approximately, you know, 5,000 to 7,000 years, we're not exactly, but around 5,000 years ago, he then came and he organized the Vedas, which into four different books, four different texts based on the kind of knowledge. And then he put that to writing so that this knowledge shouldn't get lost. But over a few thousand years, they had, this knowledge had been passed on from student to teacher, and different Vedas were composed at different times in history. Yes, the rishis, the sages who could acquire this knowledge. Yes.
And is there any evidence that?
Yeah, major and well, all the Upanishads have already been composed. We are not coming up with new Upanishads, but all these masters are composing textbooks. Like Shankaracharya, he lived in the 7th century, and he wrote so many beautiful commentaries and original texts. Christ, you know, composed the Bible 2,000 years ago, Muhammad, Buddha. So the newer master, Swami Chinmayananda, and Swami Tejomayananda, who came last week, he has composed so many beautiful texts, original Sanskrit texts. One of them we studied, you know, last week. It's called The Art of Living, Vedanta Chintanam. So the knowledge keeps on flowing, but it may not be called Upanishad, may not be called the Vedas, but new... Just as in physics, you know, the physics didn't end with Galileo or Einstein or, you know, no, the new physicists Oppenheimer and so on kept on bringing up new knowledge. So the same truth is told again and again and again and again.
And does this have such?
Yes. Okay. The Vedas, it's about 4.2 billion years. That is one yuga approximately, because the four yugas we have, Satyuga and all that. So approximately, that's what even the science says. And then when the world ends, then again the world, then it will go into hibernation. That's why there is a day of Brahmaji. The creator has a day when the world is created. And then when the world finally, even this science says that this whole, all the stars will die and they will become black holes. And then the whole universe, everything will become one big black hole. Everything will become one. That will be all destroyed. And then again, after a few billion years, which is darkness, then the world will be created. So this is not the first.
I mean, that is just amazing.
Right. Without telescopes, they knew the movements of the stars, they knew the movements of the planets, they could predict, you know, the movements and everything without telescopes, just with their inner eye. And they knew astronomy, they knew science, they knew medicine. A lot of the medicines are still used. They knew a lot of physics and chemistry and mathematics and even medicine. They were even doing surgery in those days. So, yeah, a lot of these things were known to the masters then. Today we shall meditate on the form of the Lord. From the form, we can go to the formless. Eyes shut. Back erect but not stiff. Soft smile on the lips. Meditation is a beautiful experience. Consciously relax the body from head to toe, paying attention to each part. And then go from the toe up to the head. Relax each part. Maybe first relax the top half of the body, the shoulders, the neck, the face. Relax the middle of the body from the shoulders down to the waist and the arms. Relax. Relax the lower part of the body from the hips all the way down to the toes. Now observe your breath, full attention to the air as it moves in and out. Now visualize the favorite form of the Lord in your mind. It can be Jesus, Krishna, can be the Mother Goddess, can be a saint or a prophet or a guru. Visualize the form in your mind. Completely and clearly. Fill in every detail from the head to the toes. Pay attention to each part. Feel the love, the compassion, the sweetness of the beautiful form. Look into the Lord's eyes, feel the grace and compassion flowing towards us. Notice his hands blessing us. Feel that form growing bigger and bigger till it encompasses the whole universe. The whole universe is contained in that form, and so am I. Lord envelops the whole universe, including me. I am part of Him. I am not separate. He is formless, all encompassing, taking that form for my benefit. us stay with that attitude for a few minutes. I am He and He is me. I am not separate. Or she is me.